We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello and welcome to the Prep to Pro NBA Draft Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Max Carlin, and I'm joined, as always, by Jake Rosen. Jake, how are you doing?
I'm doing well today, Max. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited that in the new era of Prep to Pro, we have our first guest, Henry Ward. How are you doing today?
Good, guys. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited.
Yeah, how do you, we should have asked this before. This is very unprofessional. How do you want to be introduced, though? Henry Ward of Pro Insight?
Henry Ward is fine. Henry Ward, whatever you guys want to do works for me.
All right. That's going to stay in there. That's going to be a fun blooper, I guess.
every episode, there's one little blooper of Max doing the intros, and like, we're going to slowly get to a point where it becomes routine. But until then, like, we got to enjoy it.
Yeah, Ben had it all together. He was asking how to introduce people, what he was plugging. I'm still learning the ropes of doing introductions, so apologies for that. But today we're talking about latent skill. So what we're trying to get at here are when prospects, I would say, demonstrate flashes of abilities or skills, but because of some limiting factor, they're not consistently exhibiting that ability right now. Because, like, I guess the general idea would be, like, if draft analysis was merely evaluating, like, exactly what is happening on a basketball floor and then just saying who the best players are or what a player is currently capable of, or not even currently capable of, but what a player currently does in, like, the context of their role, it would be a lot easier than it is. But what we're actually left doing is trying to figure out what players are going to become. And I think a lot of that is sort of getting into what skills are kind of hidden by context or by where a player is on the developmental arc. You guys have anything to add before we get into sort of specific examples?
No, I mean, not personally. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head in terms of the summary and everything that comes with it. Let's get into it.
Cool.
The one thing I would quickly add, just like the one thing I've encountered, I think, more this year than last year with a lot of guys is like what flashing skills, quote unquote, means. Like, it's kind of, Max said, like, I think we kind of get caught up sometimes in like these very brief showings of like what a peak outcome could be if everything clicked. Like, I think the most like recent example I have in my head is that like the Kai like on ball, like switched onto a guard, steal into a step back three, like, I, like, that's, I guess, a flash, but I'm not sure it's like fair to say that Kai Jones necessarily has that like level of ball skills to be hitting step back threes all the time. So I think in just clarifying what we mean by like flash, to be like consistently shows that there is a skill there. And like, as we're going to talk about, just for whatever reason, it doesn't come up consistently yet.
Yeah, that's an important point. It's like Isaac Okoro hit three or four step back threes last year. There's no limiting factor that prevents Isaac Okoro from hitting step back threes that he's otherwise capable of hitting. Like, he's not really capable of it. He did it a couple times in what were essentially like a bunch of one-offs. Like, it's not a hidden skill for him. We're going to discuss Okoro later in an area where I think he did kind of have some hidden skills in high school that further skill development elsewhere allowed him to really showcase. But yeah, I think that's an important point, that it's not, you know, it's not one-off flashes in quotes. It's something that's consistently there once you can adjust for other factors, I think. So the first thing that we've got is areas where I think guys are held back in displaying one skill because they're severely lacking in one area that kind of mitigates it. So the first one that we have is strength, because there are a few really relevant guys this year. Henry, do you want to get into a little bit of Zaire Williams's limitations with strength?
Sure. So as I think, you know, we've seen through Zaire's high school career, there's like an incredible level of shot making there, both off the dribble, off movement, as a spot up guy from NBA range. Like there's clearly some on ball equity there. And I think this year, what we've seen a lot of just through like his inefficiencies and just watching the tape, it's pretty apparent that the reason those skills haven't translated is because he has like no real ability yet to create any sort of downhill threat. And I would even say that expands beyond just the shot making. I think he's shown that in the past, he can be a very good advantage passer. And even defensively, he consistently shows a very good understanding of like rotational awareness, where to be, kind of, he gets a lot of those, you know, passing lane steals where he's playing two guys. And you can see at the point of attack too, but he just can't wear any contact. So there's a lot of possessions where he'll get the ball on the perimeter and take, you know, like a couple sort of, not probe dribbles, but like trying to sense where he can get a guy moving. And when he realizes that like the advantage isn't going to be this like wide open lane, he kind of backs off because he knows that he can't really like get into him and get into like a physical joust and win. So you see a lot of games where Stanford is like down, you know, 8-10, and that quickly turns into like 16-20 because all of a sudden he's like realizing that he's supposed to be the one making the shots and he can't do anything but shoot these like semi-contested pull-up threes because he can't create any downhill action. So that's kind of been like the spiraling effect of like why he's shooting, in my opinion, why he's shooting like 31% from three. It's not that he can't shoot, it's that he can't create shots because there's nothing for him to bank on other than that step back, other than like the hesitation pull. And like I said too, it translates defensively because, you know, he will have these moments where he plays a lane well, and then he's, you know, trying to recover on an advantage and he has the size and like the angle reading to do it. But it gets bumped and it doesn't matter at all that he like had those initial reactions. It's worth mentioning that like Zaire is really lacking in terms of strength. Like he's not like guys who it's like, even someone like Mobley, it's like, oh, well, you know, he'll get stronger and it'll really change things for him. Like Zaire really can't like take any kind of contact. Which is a huge issue for him right now, kind of for those reasons.
The wait is finally over. Football is in full effect and the NBA is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on everything imaginable this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. Head to BetOnline today and use promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. From rare dead stock to the latest release, you can find the exact sneaker you've been looking for on eBay. As the original sneaker marketplace, eBay is the place to go cop the pair you've been eyeing. With eBay's authenticity guarantee, a team of independent professional authenticators perform a rigorous inspection of the sneakers you purchase before they're sent to you, so you can confidently shop knowing your pair's the real deal. For sneaker sellers out there, eBay has estimated selling fees on sneakers over $100, making it free to sell or flip your collection. With other sites taking as much as 25%, you're going to have a lot of extra money left for more sneakers. Check out ebay.com/sneakers today.
Yeah, Zaire is really unstable and unable to maintain balance through any contact. And I think that, you know, he is certainly limited by handle, by burst limitations. But something as simple as like, he really cannot use a ball screen because you can just bump him and he like can't take it tight enough. He can't create an advantage with a ball screen. And like, just consider how much of a limiter that is in the present on creating advantages. Like so much of basketball is relying on using ball screens to just like not have that available to you because you're so incapable of maintaining balance because you're so weak is a really significant limiter. And that doesn't mean that he's completely incapable of being a good ball screen player. He just needs to attain a certain level of strength that's going to allow him to actually use them. As well as, you know, then say he, you know, he's coming off a ball screen and he's working downhill. Then the next level is, can he take a bump and still, you know, maintain his driving angle? You know, that these things all compound. And when you just hit that baseline then of strength, it'll enable, or it could enable, what would appear to be like exponential growth in all these areas. But in reality, there are skills that are kind of there that, like, Zaire Williams has moments where he'll use a ball screen, snake it, and like get to a really nice pull up from the elbow with a level of fluidity and shot making for a guy that size that's very rare. But he's not necessarily always capable of doing that on account of how weak he is.
Yeah, and Henry hit on it. The thing that really stands out to me that's like being really, you know, hindered by this lack of strength is like this playmaking. Like, he's been a very high field player all throughout lower levels, like especially in high school when given the chance, like you said, like a good plus one passer when he has, you know, can work from a tilted defense. But, you know, like he, like you guys both mentioned, and I don't really want to beat the dead horse here, but I mean, his inability to, you know, not only create, like we talk about getting by your primary and drawing help, like not even getting a half of step to draw the help or getting downhill, and then like the lack of ability to actually like take a bump when he is gets a half a step. And like that, I really haven't seen, I mean, maybe you guys have watched more, but like that playmaking from him. And I think like that's something that if it all comes together, you know, him being like this tall, like 6'8" wing shooter, who I think is clearly better than the percentages show, and then that feel can also get tied back in, like that's where you're looking at the appeal of Zaire Williams. But until that, like until the strength gets developed, I think like that's going to stay hidden, which is kind of a shame. And that's like, you know, the same thing which we'll get to with Okoro, is like his passing was hidden for different reasons. And I think there is going to be a point in the NBA when Okoro is a plus wing passer and it's all going to come together. And I just think, you know, it would be huge for Zaire if he could bring that back.
Yeah,
meanwhile, and go ahead, Max.
No,
I was going to say the one thing you can see with Zaire is in transition a lot, he's like so comfortable in the open court when there's no threat of contact, throwing those like crack passes to you know, guys running lanes, guys running corner. And then the other thing I was just going to say is that kind of getting on a more micro level here with like the way the strength mitigates him is like, there is concern about the handle. But I think you can kind of see to an extent that like part of the issue with the handle is he physically can't keep himself upright to like, or keep himself on balance to make drastic movements with the ball in his hand. It's not an issue of like him not knowing what to do or him not having reactivity or him like not having tangible sort of like nerves in his hands to control the ball. It's just that he can't really change his direction of his body very quickly because there's nothing keeping it together. So seeing like long-term how he with, you know, a stronger core, better base could potentially sort of like pull out those sort of oversized dribble moves considering how tall he is. That's really exciting to think about because right now all those sort of crossovers happen so close to his body because he can't like redirect his weight very well just because his core is so weak.
Yeah. Sort of any shock to the system that is like his balance is going to prove disastrous. And that doesn't have to be just chasing, you know, off screens, which he also can't do because, you know, if he gets bumped there, he tips over. But I think it's very relevant with something like dribble moves, that if the, you know, the whole way that those are successful is by selling them. If you're physically incapable of selling them because you would essentially fall over, you know, that's pretty harmful. I wanted to move on to BJ Boston, if that's okay, because his issues I think are very different in that he is not like so fundamentally limited in every aspect of the game in the way that Zaire is. but his specific stylistic proclivities that were successful in the past have started to fail him against stronger competition. And so we got at this, I think, a lot in our advantage creation complexity episode, but BJ Boston has like a strength-based finishing game where he's really reliant on initiating contact to create separation, and then has craft finishes and footwork and all that sort of stuff to allow him to finish. But he has this style that's highly reliant on strength that he just doesn't have at this level. So there could be significant gains in his ability to create advantages and create windows to finish should he attain a level of strength relative to his competition that's actually workable again.
Yeah, the finishing is a big thing that I definitely wanted to talk about. It's really interesting, you know, a lot of those, you see it a lot in smaller guards who, you know, are at a disadvantage physically from a tool standpoint, like some Trey Mann, we're going to talk about in a little bit. But Trey Mann, like I sent out a tweet the other day, Trey Mann has basically zero vertical pop, definitely lacks strength and has a thinner frame, but makes up for it for, you know, these same hand, same leg finishes, is really reliant, like not reliant, you know, capable as like a scoop finisher and like using creative angles, and like, which compensates for this lack of strength. Someone like Sharif Cooper, you know, again, not a ton of vertical pop, slender frame, very crafty around the rim, knows how to use different sides of the rim to protect him from shot blockers, all that good stuff. BJ finishes like you mentioned, you know, like someone who's 6'6", 225, and like that's how he goes in and, you know, throws his body around. It in high school, you know, he was able to, you know, take the bump off these smaller fours and weaker rim protectors, but against high level competition. And I think this was something you and Ben really hit on in the beginning of the year as well. Like, it was, you know, instantly obvious once he was playing college competition and older players that this, you know, probably wasn't going to hold up for the time being. Now, is that to say, and I think, and I know Henry, I think you actually had a tweet about this too. Basically, if the strength does come around, we're kind of looking at this like unique finisher in terms of his willingness to embrace contact and also have the length to enable him to do these craft extension finishes. And that's something intriguing later down the line. But, you know, BJ Boston being efficient around the rim as a college player, like that probably isn't going to happen.
I think the one thing that also separates BJ from Zaire in a way that's worthwhile is I think Zaire can sort of play like kind of what you guys have been touching on, but like, I think Zaire can play the same way he plays now with a little bit added core strength, and you would see major gains, where I think BJ would have to put on like a legit 40 pounds of strength for him to like really work, like translate that finishing package, which is a little concerning to me. But like you guys said too, like there is a level of just shock in terms of, you kind of see it. You still kind of see it from time to time, whatever it is, 20 games in, where he does what he's used to doing and just ends up on one foot or on the floor. And it's like, there's just going to be a natural learning pattern there. So I think it can go both ways in that, yes, the it's more uphill given what he needs to do in the weight room. But I also think there will be just a different level of pattern recognition happening for the first time kind of this year, in his kind of like first few years in the NBA, I'd imagine, where he's realizing that he can't just like do these crazy stride finish, you know, like hammering a guy with his shoulder and going up with his hand. Like, that's not going to happen anymore, because when he tries to hammer the guy with his shoulder, he's just going to be falling on the floor. Like, there's just a general level of kind of just trial and error of like, what can I do against people who outweigh me by 25 pounds, which is 80% of the NBA. So I think it's an interesting kind of cross comparison there between the two, because they have similar issues for similar reasons, but the way they're going to have to go about fixing them are much different.
Yeah, I think in the two of them, you have a couple of guys who, in Zaire's case, I think really has self-creation that is limited by virtue more of his physical deficiencies at the moment than skill or mental deficiencies. Whereas with Boston, it's self-creation slash just finishing in general, where I think he very much has the skill, craft, and to an extent, like the feel for it, but doesn't have the strength to execute the style that he has always played with. And both of them will simply, Boston may have to adjust more. Whereas Zaire, I think that it shouldn't be thought that like he's a guy who is just simply a terrible self-creator. The way that he's analyzed should be more like he has a lot of skills actually in that area. It's just that he has some pretty severe limitations as well. And it's more so about addressing the limitations than enhancing the skills. I think we should move on to sort of handle and live dribble coordination. The first area that can limit a lot, I think, is passing. And so Jake mentioned Isaac Okoro. And I think this was very apparent with Okoro in high school, that he was capable of executing like higher level reads, seeing how the defense was rotating, not once, but then seeing the rotation behind that and passing in response to that or in anticipation of that. The issue is that he was really uncoordinated as a handler and as a gatherer. And so like working off the dribble, it was hard for him to do that, to execute those passes. But then if you could get him in situations where he's like downhill and doesn't have to dribble, he could even make those passes on the move. And then I think at Auburn, you saw that Okoro had improved a ton as a handler, that he was both more comfortable with it and like more deceptive with it. And we saw a really good wing passer at Auburn.
Yeah, Auburn was kind of funny because there would be these situations where the downhill threat he had due to his strength was kind of that was the advantage creator, just like him having the shoulders he had basically was the way that like he got treated like he could dribble. And like Max, like you said, Max, like there was some significant advancements there. I don't want to like sell him short there. But I'm thinking like one play was in specific, I think it was at Kentucky where he has the ball at the top of the key. I don't remember who's in the corner on Auburn, but like Emmanuel quickly is guarding the guy in the corner and it looks like a 2-3 zone because they're loaded up so strong that like a core on the top of the key and like doesn't have to do anything, but he's like trying to figure out, he like does a couple like those basic right hand dribbles trying to figure out if he can create an advantage and realizes he can just like rise and fire and just like throws this basic like jump skip past the corner and it's like, oh well, didn't really have to do anything. And that's kind of the reason I was, you know, I liked Isaac Okoro a lot, just because he's like, they're like, we kind of been talking about, there's just a lot there mentally and tangibly. He just kind of has to get used to it. Like there, he has to see himself as someone who like has that responsibility, which I think comes pretty easily once you're empowered by a coaching staff that's telling you, you know, this is what you should be doing. And when you have the investment of being a top five pick, and I think he's showing a little bit, haven't watched too much of him in the NBA yet. But I think he's showing a little bit of it, but it's going to, I think, going to begin to come out as time goes on.
Yeah, I mean, I also want to talk about Jalen Suggs, you know, in this lens. As someone who's been watching a lot of Gonzaga, wrote about Suggs. He's really interesting because he's still able to be, you know, a very effective manipulative passer. And that's largely due to, you know, we talked about him a lot in our, you know, his utilization of ball fakes and showing the ball and moving the defense, getting people to bite where they shouldn't, and then, you know, taking advantage of it by throwing a skip pass across the court without even doing anything, you know, without even putting the ball on the ground and dribbling, you know, his ability to just move the defense with his eyes and showing the ball. I mean, it's pretty outlier. However, he is hindered in some instances off the bounce because of this loose handle and lack of ball security. So while I don't think it's necessarily detrimental to him as a playmaker, I think you definitely will see some instances in Gonzaga and probably until, you know, he makes some handle improvements in the pros where, you know, he's probably hindered, whether it's throwing a live dribble skip pass or, you know, actually moving the defense with his handle. You know, you're probably not going to see those as often as you'd like from someone who's going to have the ball as much as him. He's pretty damn good at compensating it in other areas, like I talked about, and still being an effective playmaker. But, you know, that's definitely something to monitor with him.
One thing with Suggs too is everything happens with all the passes happen with two hands or the right hand. So you can see pretty clearly that there are times where he gets into an advantage and doesn't feel comfortable either with his gather or with his like sort of measure between find or finish. So he'll, what I mean by that is he'll come off a screen, he'll get into a situation where it's him in the big and then help defender. And he doesn't yet have the sort of handle tightness to like feel comfortable keeping the ball alive. He'll have to pick it up and then the decision's kind of forced from there. But I think you'll see as time goes on, and also what that means too, without being able to throw left-hand passes, is he has to contort his body a lot of ways. So that makes the decision for him in that he can't, you know, if it's a strong side kick to the corner, or better yet, a weak side kick to the corner driving right, he can't adjust to where he can be going to the rim and then put the ball in his left hand and get it out. He has to already sort of compensate by turning his body, and then the decision is basically made for him. So I think you'll see, I think pretty quickly, that he'll develop that left hand, which will open up a lot of more of his reads, because you can tell that he sees them. He just can't decide whether he has to commit to them or not. So being able to add to that sort of dexterity in terms of just having the ball in your hands and being comfortable, A, with a live dribble, and B, passing with both hands, you're going to see a lot more like, whoa, that was a, you know, that was an impressive pass. Whereas now it's a lot of like, everything seems more deliberate because he can't execute those like diverse basic actions.
The wait is finally over. Football is in full effect and the NBA is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at Bet Online. Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on everything imaginable this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. Head to BetOnline today and use promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. From rare dead stock to the latest release, you can find the exact sneaker you've been looking for on eBay. As the original sneaker marketplace, eBay is the place to go cop the pair you've been eyeing. With eBay's authenticity guarantee, a team of independent professional authenticators perform a rigorous inspection of the sneakers you purchase before they're sent to you, so you can confidently shop knowing your pair's the real deal. For sneaker sellers out there, eBay has estimated selling fees on sneakers over $100, making it free to sell or flip your collection. With other sites taking as much as 25%, you're going to have a lot of extra money left for more sneakers. Check out ebay.com/sneakers today.
And with Suggs being so anticipatory and manipulative, the returns on having access to these passes on the move could be even further magnified, because we already know, we can deduce from what he can already do, that Suggs is a uniquely anticipatory player, that he really is several steps ahead of everyone else. And so then having, I think that, you know, the potential for these having these more deliveries and more reads, is there's a lot of potential to compound there and just enhance his playmaking further and further. And this is for a guy who, even with his current limitations, we're seeing that he's a high level passer. But there's potential to be even more.
Yeah, we can move on from him. No, I was going to say we can move on. But okay. Yeah, I completely agree with the sentiments.
Yeah, the other handle-related limitation, I think, is rim pressure. So Anthony Edwards strikes me as relevant here, where certainly a lot of Anthony Edwards' issues are just approach-based and decision-making-based. But He definitely had real handle limitations as well. He had real limitations, I think, based on the spacing of the college game. And I think he's taken to NBA spacing well and has gotten to the rim more. But if he had more of a tight quarters handle, then to what extent do the decision-making issues get mitigated? Like, are we maybe, overestimating the amount of his issues in approach that should be attributed purely to just like nebulous approach, and underestimating the fact that maybe he just doesn't have the handle to get to these places, even though he is a wildly explosive player who is capable of blowing by people and getting to the rim. It's, I think, with him maybe a matter of of like assigning the credit or blame in the right spot.
Well, I think it's also important to sort of consider that one leads to the other to a certain extent, which is kind of, it's been kind of comedic how you see that happening now in the NBA, where he, you can tell that he's not used to being able to get these lanes that he's seeing now. Like, I'm thinking specifically about the kind of two big dunks he's had, like the one against the Raptors and the one against the Lakers. Like, both times they're both closeout situations, and he'll step back into a three and then realize, oh, wait a minute, there's like no one standing in front of me. And I think that's a result of him having played in situations where spacing are much worse, like you talked about, Max, to where he's used to kind of like that approach-based thinking is like, I shouldn't be driving on closeouts, because if I do, I'm gonna get stripped, or if I do, I'm gonna get offensive foul or whatever it is. And so now he's kind of realizing in front of our eyes pretty quickly that, like, in the NBA, that's not the case. So in that way, I think you can sort of attribute it more to the perception of kind of what's available to him just internally. Like, I think he realizes now that things that attempts he's had in the past that have gone poorly for him, he can now replicate with when they go well, just simply because of context. So it's been kind of funny to see, like, his two big highlight plays are, like, obviously awesome and super fun, but they're also very good examples of him, like, literally thinking on the fly and realizing pretty ostensibly clearly in the play, like, in the moment, that things are much different for him now as in terms of being a slashing threat.
Yeah, the dunk is it really is a great example, because, like, he goes to take a sidestep three and then realizes, wait, I should just go dunk on poor Yuta. Like, that's a great approach change for Anthony Edwards, and it's a big deal. Like, I think at Georgia, that is a sidestep three for him. But like you said, Henry, like, that lane doesn't exist for him at Georgia. And it's a more spread out game. And I think that I definitely feel like I underestimated how much he could benefit from space, given how uniquely explosive he is. Just the fact that people are going to have to cover more ground to rotate to him, that he's going to have more space to operate with his handle. He can be such an overwhelming downhill threat. I think that the fact that he's already, I think, upped his rim frequency in his rookie year is really encouraging. And I think, like, strong evidence for the idea that you do have to try to isolate where these issues are coming from. And like, the blanket idea of college spacing is bad, It shouldn't be applied as broadly as it is. But with someone specifically like Ant, who seems to really take to these now much, much wider and inviting driving lanes, it seems like the implications so far are pretty significant.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought up the dunk, Henry, because, like, that, you know, highlight play, super fun and all, but like you said, Max, kind of took the words out of my mouth. Like, at Georgia, that's more than likely a sidestep three. Like, Ant has been capable of baptizing people like that since he was a junior in high school, and he just chooses not to sometimes. And while that's, you know, while that's attributed to the handle or the decision making, you know, whichever one it was, it wasn't happening. And I do really want to, like, reemphasize the point of him benefiting from NBA spacing more than others. One of my least favorite, you know, retorts in draft season is don't mention college spacing, everyone's better with NBA spacing. And while that is true, you know, it means more to someone like Anthony Edwards, who is just a 99th percentile explosive wing athlete who can eat up space in a second, than it does for someone, I don't really know who I want to, like, catch astray here, but, you know, someone who's not as explosive and athletic. Like, it's going to matter much more for Ant. And, you know, we're seeing, like you said, Henry, very quickly, you know, when he is willingness and, like, applies willingness and aggressiveness to get downhill, you know, with that athletic profile, it's been pretty effective so far.
I love the point that Henry made about, like, it's kind of a chicken and the egg situation with the handle, mm-hmm. and the decision-making. It's like, you could say his approach or decision-making are bad, but is that necessarily the case if like, he is correct in his calculation that driving here would be bad? Like, it's not going to end well for me. I don't have the handle to maneuver this driving lane. Then, you know, maybe the decision-making actually just stems from the handle. And we're looking at his decision-making as maybe like a latent skill there, where it's actually not bad and he's making like strong calculations here. The issue is just that he doesn't have the skill capability to do it. And I think it can be really hard to figure out which, you know, which is which. And that's what makes all of this so difficult.
And not to complicate any further, but just, it's also difficult because there's one sort of, the inverse of this, of course, is guys who suffer from the same spacing issues, but don't care to measure themselves in what they do in terms of approaching those spacing issues. One name that comes to mind is Cole Anthony. Kind of what I thought a lot of discourse around Cole Anthony missed is that everyone obviously, you know, rightfully got upset at how clogged lanes were in North Carolina and how much that sort of limited him as a finisher. But I personally found it very frustrating that he would continuously make those decisions regardless of the continuously negative outcome. Like that's a poor reflection of A, your development, and B, your decision-making. He would consistently, you know, I think like, I even remember DMing Jake about this, like in one of my first conversations is like, there were so many plays where Cole would just drive into these crowded keys, knowing that, I think in the back of his head, knowing that it was going to be crowded. He was going to have to like figure out some, you know, fancy, creative, athletic finish, which very often they weren't converted. And as a result, he missed all of these passing reads all year where he could have just jump stopped, turned around and hit somebody because everyone was just, once Cole Anthony was going, everyone just watched him go. And I can't really speak to his NBA production yet in terms of how it looks now with NBA spacing. But just, I think it is important to consider that, you know, just because a guy like Ant isn't always going in there, that's not necessarily, it can be a good thing too, because the inverse of that is just like really bad chain of events where someone is just like for an entire year drilling into themselves that it doesn't matter what the paint looks like when you drive. It's gotta be a finish. It's never going to be a pass, or it's never going to be not even a drive. So yeah, I mean, I don't want to complicate it further, but I think it is a sort of a very multi-layered evaluation process of like, what is the issue here on both ends?
Yeah, I also want to throw another name that's kind of victim to this chicken and the egg in terms of handle and decision-making in terms of shot selection. And I think that's Deuce McBride. You know, we've seen his inability to really leverage that and get downhill. And then it ends in him resorting to these tough pull-ups that, you know, he just uses his elevation and rises over the defense. And while, you know, the ability to nail pull-ups as a guard and hit them at a pretty high clip, at which he does, is very valuable, you know, being solely reliant on that. And I haven't actually scouted him in a while, but I've been watching a lot of Big 12 basketball live. And, you know, just anecdotally, it does look like he's getting to the rim a little bit more as of late and, you know, getting into some floaters, having some scoop finishes in the half court, just little things like that, that, you know, wouldn't necessarily be a huge deal for everyone else. But for someone like him, when you consider the pull-up shooting and the defense, like those are the little things that could help him move the needle. But yeah, I definitely think, you know, he catches some flack for his shot selection when in reality, like to me, the actual issue is, you know, the lack of actual ability to do anything else because of the handle that hinders him, in my opinion.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh my, look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
The NBA Finals are heating up. Looking for hot takes on all the postseason action? The Old Man and the Three, presented by BMW, is the podcast to listen to for the ultimate finals coverage. Host and former NBA sharpshooter J.J. Redick not only has a plugged-in perspective on the action from his time in the league, but he's also announcing the games in real time for ESPN. J.J. has the ultimate insider point of view, and he's taking you along for the ride as he breaks down the best defensive schemes, dunks, and drives from each game. And speaking of incredible drives, there's no better place to tune into your new favorite podcast, The Old Man and the Three, than in a standard-setting BMW. Luxury meets power to create a wholly new driving experience. Push the limits this NBA season with the brand that set the ultimate standard, BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
McBride is an interesting one. Because there, it's a weird context, right? Like West Virginia is a too big offense, and it is a too big offense.
Yeah.
And like, there are a lot of instances where he is taking tough pull-ups where there really is not a better option. Like, it truly is the best option that he has. And meanwhile, like, when he is at the rim, I do think that he is a pretty skilled and capable finisher.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I've definitely seen with him, which I was going to mention briefly later, but an inability to make the layered reads maybe he'll see the rotation over to him and he can drop it off, but then he doesn't see the rotation after that. And he's like that skip is not there for him. Like he's not seeing that. And so I do think that with him, there are like higher level understanding issues, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of context that comes into play there as well. And I do think that it's worth asking with him, to what extent are the pull-ups, you know, intrinsically Miles McBride, and to what extent are they a product of a very like specific context?
Yeah, he's to me, he's also someone that, you know, proves the difference. And Henry actually just wrote about him defensively, you know, the difference in processing with defensive rotations as a team defender and then, you know, processing them as an offensive ball handler in terms of making plays. Like, I think we can all agree he's a pretty good team defender, pretty damn good team defender. You know, there's some clips. Are you pushing that? You want to push back on that, Max?
No, I was just going to say that his anticipation as a team defender is mind-boggling.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, you were going to say something. But yeah, he's, you know, pretty, like, as I said, I was saying, pretty damn good as a team defender. You know, there are some wild clips in there of him, you know, being two steps ahead of the offense, incredible at splitting the difference between the two. As a small guard, like that defensive coverage that we talked about, as a 6'2 guard, he's probably as good as it gets. And, you know, that just doesn't really translate to the offensive end. Like, he honestly makes more layered reads in help defensively than he does as the offensive ball handler, which is, you know, another weird.
He inarguably does.
Yeah. Yep. Which, you know, is a really another really interesting thing about his evaluation as a prospect.
So I guess we're talking about conceptual understanding now. Henry, did you want to apply this a little bit to Jalen Johnson?
Sure. So basically what my thinking was is, I know personally, me and Jake talk about this like all the time, is the very flawed but natural comparison of Jalen Johnson to Scottie Barnes, and kind of how they're playing likely at their peaks a very similar role, given how kind of smart they are as passers, at their size, and kind of how in very different ways they can theoretically guard the same position groups as kind of bigs, but also being able to kind of play, you know, above the screen coverages, and also kind of providing that rim protection. But I think what we see a lot with Jalen Johnson is that while there is like a general understanding of, you know, how to get to spots defensively, what responsibilities are, it always comes sort of a second late, which leaves a lot of plays looking like he was so close to making the right play and he just doesn't. But it happens so overwhelming, like an overwhelming amount of the time, that at a certain point it's like, well, he doesn't really know what he should be doing there. And I think this is kind of the main inhibitor in him sort of fulfilling that vision of him being the small ball five who's, you know, perimeter centric ball mover on offense and then can play it, you know, on the perimeter defensively and still protect the rim. I don't think he has the recovery tools, which is what makes it such an exciting idea. Like, he's an unbelievable athlete, both vertically, fluidly, laterally. But he does not have the requisite sort of understanding at 6'9" to be able to cover that ground effectively. So I think it leads to a lot of situations where all of his blocks in the half court are sort of obvious, like, he's directly involved in the play, whether it's because he's guarding the screener or he's guarding the ball handler. And then he's making this insane recovery play, which you can see that and be like, oh, well, you know, that's a hell of a rim protector for 6'9". But then once he's off the ball, you know, he's not doing that, like the 3 second dance, you know, where he's got 1 foot in the paint, 1 foot out. He's not really rotating over with verticality. It's everything's kind of like a home run play with him, which I think kind of, you know, like I said, the idea is there for obvious reasons, but I think it will kind of catch up to him and kind of ultimately inhibit his ability to actually fulfill that role.
Yeah, I think like the most underrated thing with the whole everyone is a small ball five thing is that you actually have to know how to play as a big man to be a small ball five. And so that means like having a feel for maneuvering and pick and roll coverages, like, you know, having a feel for recovery, and then, yeah, doing little things like avoiding 3 second violations and positioning yourself so that you can help. You actually have to know how to do these things. And Jalen Johnson has not done those things historically. Like, he's been a wing creator. And so like before he can satisfy like the requirements of being a small ball five, well, he needs experience doing it. Like, he needs to learn how to do it. And that's something that like has to be accounted for, even if he is a guy who has capability rotating and recovering, that like he has these skills to actually be a successful small ball five. He has to know how to be a big man.
Yeah, no, 100%. And the thing I keep personally coming back to between Scottie and Jalen Johnson is that, you know, Scottie has experience playing his ideal role in the NBA. Jalen doesn't really have that, you know, as someone who was pretty on ball all throughout his like pre-college, whether it was at Nicolet or, you know, with, Phenom U. Phenom U and the EYBL, you know, those were two creation heavy roles that he was playing with them. And in turn, like you are, and he was on the perimeter defensively a lot more. So I think, you know, we're seeing these growing pains with him operating as the drop and pick and roll, playing the low man and having to tag and recover and slot over for rim protections. And while, you know, Scottie isn't really getting asked to do that at Florida State, we've seen him do it in high school with Montford, playing alongside De'Ron Sharp as the four and even playing some small ball five. So, you know, that is something that I keep considering when comparing those two. Is that I think Scottie actually has the requisite experience to kind of excel initially, while with Jalen, like, I think it's more of a long-term project than some are wanting to actually acknowledge.
Yeah, the other area where I think conceptual understanding can limit physical ability would be playmaking. So I think we saw this with Kyra Lewis last year for sure. Hyper functional playmaker, like live dribble on the move, both hands with that super seamless transition from dribble to pass, like I think there are a few guys who are relevant with this year. Jake, do you want to get into a little bit Trey Mann there?
Yeah, so I mean, I wanted to bring up Trey Mann for this. I just caught up with one of their games. Had to circle back with him. And, you know, he's very functional as a passer. He's capable throwing lob dribble skip passes with both hands. He's creative using angles. You know, some of that creativity that I mentioned with him as a finisher, with exploiting unique angles, catching people off guard, taking advantage of windows. He has that. He's capable of that. He knows how to, you know, leverage his pull-up gravity to, you know, draw defense. And, you know, he's very capable off the bounce and always has been. He's a very capable scorer off the bounce. And in turn, that allows him to be a capable playmaker off the bounce. But, you know, where you see these limitations is that it's all reactive stuff. You know, if the defense moves here as it's in turn to me throwing a pump fake, I'm going to slip this in here. And I haven't really seen him, you know, pump fake to the tag man and hit the opposite skip. Like, he doesn't really do that. And as someone who is big on Kyra, the reason why I was, you know, willing to accept that this was him as a passer, and apparently I haven't watched that much Pelicans, but Pelicans people I follow seem to say he looks great. Apparently the passing has been good. And, you know, why I was willing to accept that with Kyra is that I trusted his ability to create advantages very easily in the half court with that speed and burst. And, you know, in the few times I have watched the Pelicans, I have seen that. With Trey Mann, he also lacks the burst to always draw the defense and create it. So it's a little bit more complicated with him. And so that's somewhere like I would like for him to grow. It's good to see him being willing as a playmaker. And he, like I said, he is creative. He is competent. But yeah, like hindering, you definitely see the lack of like processing with these layered reads with him.
Yeah, I think if you like are really attentive to what the passes are with those two guys in particular, it starts to become clear that they're so capable of delivering passes physically, but don't have the next level understanding. So like I think with Mann that translates to like a lot of really nice drop-offs. They're really good, they're awesome passes, but they don't reflect high-level conceptual understanding. So it's that issue, he is objectively doing something good. It is a really good pass that he's making, but you have to understand the limitation there, that like it's a really good pass that he's making on account of his ability to create advantages and his ability to execute passes seamlessly. It's not on account of him being, having a high level conceptual understanding. The thing is then, if you can add that high level conceptual understanding to that functionality and to that ability to create those windows in the first place, then you have someone who can really, really drive team offense at a high level.